Blog Talk Radio.
If my natural rhythm is that I sleep late, I should A, wake up late, B, wake up early, or C, do whatever you want, Brett, but stop using the term natural rhythm. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. Brett from the bunker, we're live. It's your May 12th, 2020, Tuesday. You don't know what day it is, you can pretend. But I'm joined today by my guest, Ronnie Pascal. Ronnie!
Hello. How are you?
Hello, hello. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Brett from the bunker. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So I ask everyone this. I need to ask you, how are you holding up?
I'm doing okay. I found a rhythm in doing online shows, online comedy shows, that I didn't think I would like, but kind of found to like. So that's been a good thing to, like, pass my day most of the day.
You're doing a lot of them.
Yeah. I've been doing 5 a week of my own and then trying to jump into other people's shows, too.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So tell everyone what you do. What are the 5 shows a week that you do?
So 3 days a week, I do just like a straightforward late night stand-up comedy show. I keep pitching it to people that I want it to be like Conan / Letterman, but obviously not as good. But so I just do some topical news jokes up top, and then I have some friends come on. I generally have 3 guests a night, and I try to make them play weird, fun characters. Like one character I had someone play that I really liked was I pitched for them to do a tarot reader, but the tarot reader accidentally brought their son's Pokemon cards to the tarot read instead of their tarot cards.
Nice, so, I like that.
Yeah, so I tried to, like, little silly bits like that. And then there's 3 comedians, so they either do, like, stand-up or sketch or characters or whatever. And then once a week I do a show called Quarantine Dating Game, and it's a parody of, like, 1960s, 1970s, like, dating shows on TV.
I was on that.
Yeah, that was a fun one, right?
Yeah, that was super fun. I had a great time.
Yeah. This week's going to be the 3rd or 4th one. I lost track. And, so that's just me assigning people characters, or they pitch me a character they want to do, and they answer dating questions from the point of view of, like, my favorite one that I came up with on my own was an ASMR guy who lives in his mom's basement and his mom keeps interrupting.
And then, I like that.
Yeah. And then the last show I just started, it's called Roast Yourself. And people just write roast jokes and perform roast jokes about themselves.
That could be fraught. I could see that being psychologically fraught for me. That would be tough. I think I could do it. I'm not shy. I'm not, you know, saying I couldn't, but I think that would be, I don't know, that would be a lot of therapy. That would be an extra couple of therapy sessions maybe if I did that, because you're going after what you used to look like and how you used to be, and you know all your stuff, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing, too, is while they're doing it, I have a picture of their younger self on screen.
See, I was very cute when I was younger, so that actually wouldn't bother me. I don't think there must be embarrassing pictures of me, but I don't have any. Like, I'm unaware.
They
of
don't
any.
Exist at all anywhere.
I didn't say they didn't exist. They just I don't have them. like I'm sure there are some because I went through a period where I barely dressed like a human. Like, I'm colorblind, and so if I don't pay attention, I will just pick clothes, and it's like, you know, I'm wearing orange plaid. Like, I don't care. You know,
oh, there's something wrong with that.
Oh, it was pretty ugly. Things did not match. There was not a whole lot of color coordination going on. So, I mean, if there's pictures of that somewhere, then those might be a little embarrassing. But otherwise, I think generally what I have is pretty good. But it's more the stuff that I know about myself, and, you know, it could get kind of serious. I don't know. I could see that going in a very dark direction.
Yeah, my first one, I was like, oh, I'm going to write dark jokes because everyone else is going to write dark jokes. And I was like, I'll go last. Or no, I think I went first, and I just told, like, jokes about myself because I was like, let's set the tone of what this is because no one else has done this show yet.
What are we on? Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on my what's it called? My regular phone with headphones on. Is it weird sounding?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's all right. Go ahead.
Let me see if I can fix that real quick. If you give me like 10 seconds, I could fix it.
Yeah, I can vamp.
I can
think of something
into...
to talk about. Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me get. I could put the music back on. I don't know. I like the music just at the top and the bottom of the show. So I don't know if I want to do that. But I am. What am I working on? I am working on a cover, an acoustic cover of Nazi Punk Fuck Off. Say it again.
Better?
Yeah, that is better.
Great. Yeah, I like that you brought that reference up during the show because I understood it, but I don't think anyone else did.
I know. Well, what was fun about that, I haven't done improv in a long time, and I never did improv the way people do improv now. I just did improv in acting classes. But it was always something I really enjoyed and something I'd like to get back to. So it was literally like you said, like, I don't even remember what the question was, but it was whatever it was whatever popped into my head, that's what was coming out. So,
yeah.
You know, there was no filter, there was no thinking about it. And that was honestly what was really fun about it because, you know, I mean, nobody got the reference, but oh well, I mean, you know, you got it, so that was good.
I got it, and then I direct messaged it to Amelia, the contestant. So she was like, what is this? And I was like, this is what I grew up loving.
Oh, is that right? Did you grow up a hardcore guy?
Oh, yeah. I grew up, I was obsessed with Bad Brain, Minor Threat, and a little bit of Dead Kennedys.
Nice. All good choices.
Yeah.
That Bad Brains album, I had it on yellow cassette, but that main one was just, I mean, it's magic. I put that up against just about anything. That was just an amazing, amazing album with Band in D.C. and all of those, you know,
yeah.
Fearless Vampire Killers, all that stuff. That was my jam. That was really my songs.
I imagine I would still like that album.
I know
I'm
I would.
Curious.
I absolutely would. Dead Kennedys have held up pretty well. Bad Brains have certainly held up well because they were good. Like, they really knew how to play.
Yeah, they were talented too.
Yeah, very, very talented musicians. And very influential. I think probably don't get enough credit for being as influential as they were. And you know, they would drop into a reggae song, which was kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Like they'd be doing like this. Yeah, it was like seriously heavy music, and then it was just like I love Aja. Like, wait, what? I don't understand.
Where did that come from?
I'm very confused.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were really good. I missed out seeing them live and missed out on seeing Dead Kennedys live. I saw Fugazi. I never saw Minor Threat, but I did get to see Fugazi. They were great. That was a great show.
I don't think I've seen any like legendary punk bands live. I think I'm just like slightly too young. I'm 30. I'll be 35 in a couple of days.
Oh yeah,
so
you know, you're too young. Well, except for the ones that are still playing. I mean, there's still a few that are kicking around.
But like, I had tickets to see. Do you remember the band Reagan Youth?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I had tickets to see them like 5 years ago, and then I watched some of their online videos, and I was like, I don't want to watch this live.
Yeah. Well,
they
I mean,
have,
that's
like, a new singer.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, Dead Kennedys still play, but they play. It's not with Jello, so it's kind of like,
yeah.
What's the point? Like, I don't know why.
It's like a cover band.
Well, I mean, it's weird because it's all the same guys, but it's not your lead singer. And once it's not your lead singer, it's just not going to sound the same. Particularly with Jello, he had a really unique voice. So
oh, yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know how much of. I don't think all of Minor Threat was in Fugazi, but certainly, what's his name? The lead singer was the same. So that was
Ian
cool.
MacKay.
Ian MacKay, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was a fun show. That was when I was in college out in Worcester, Mass, and it was just, you know, it was like a bombed out loft, you know, for $5. It was a real punk show, like the real deal. It wasn't even a club. Huge pit, everybody going nuts. You know, the song I remember was "You'd Make a Good Cop," which is a great punk song title.
You'd make a good
cop. Great song, great song, great show. They were really fun. I'll tell you, I don't run into a lot of people who are into that, who grew up listening to that.
Yeah, when I came to New York, I expected, because I'm from Connecticut, New Haven, so there's a pretty decent New Haven punk scene. It's small, but like there are people that like it there. And I was like, oh, yeah, when I move to New York, there's going to be people who love punk music. And I don't find it often.
No, I mean, it's definitely there. I mean, certainly you'll find people. there still is a scene. I went to see, my son was really into metal for a while, and there was a grindcore band named Brujeria, which is a Mexican grindcore band. And they're really fun, but grindcore is definitely a bit of an acquired taste. But
yeah, it's hard for me to listen to.
I'm sorry?
I said it's hard for me to listen to.
Yeah, it's tough.
But I try.
It's tough. It's not. It's definitely Brujeria is kind of fun, but like they did a fun Trump song that I liked, and you know but it's definitely rough. But there was a band that opened for them that was really an old style New York hardcore band called Billy Club Sandwich, and it was kind of fun to see. And I was listening to them, and I was like, huh, this is definitely like what I grew up with. So it's still there. Like it's out there. It's just not as big, and it's. You know, it's just not that popular. Not that many people are into it.
Get out now.
Yeah, you really got to find it. It's probably real, definitely harder than it used to be because, I mean, certainly in the 80s it was a lot more prevalent. So, good. I'm glad that you got the reference. That was fun.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, and to tie two things together, one of my roast jokes to myself, because I loved going into mosh pits, was, I hear you love going into mosh pits, but it's the only time people will touch you, and all those people are trying to shove you away.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that is the type of – so that's what you're going for with the roast yourself. Like, you want to cut deep.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, because it is interesting. I may have to check that out. I don't know. I can't decide how I would feel about that. I think it might be good. It might be good therapy, but it also could get a little dicey. I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's weird for me because I'm doing it every show, so I have to, like, constantly do it. Everyone else is just doing it one time.
Oh, you have to come up with new stuff about yourself every show?
I think so. I don't know what the rules are, but I feel like I have to, right? I don't know.
I like that you don't know what the rules are, but it's your show, Ronnie. You can do whatever you want.
It is, but, like, wouldn't people who are watching, they're the ones who make the rules because they're, like, Ronnie told this joke last show. Ronnie has told this joke five shows in a row.
I have had to be careful. There are things that I have said on this show multiple times, and I realized – and you know, when I used to do this very occasionally, like I've been doing this off and on for 10 years, and not Brett from the Bunker, just Brett Singer Radio. And when I did it very occasionally, it wasn't a big deal. I wasn't going to repeat anything. If I didn't do a show for 6 months, you know, I wasn't likely to say the same thing. Whereas you're doing it every single day – you're going to say the same stuff, and you know, yeah. I don't have time to listen back and remember what I said because I don't remember what the hell I said every day. So I need to be – I was like, all right, let's be a little conscious that, you know, we don't talk about this. We don't talk about this. Like, let's not tell that story. Like, so I agree with you. I think you're right. The people make the rules. I think that's a good way to look at it. So how did you get into all this? How did you get into comedy?
My stepfather owns a pizza place, right? So when I was growing up, I was the cashier because I was a terrible cook, and I was really bad at, like, prepping the food, and he's like, the only use for you is to take people's money and answer the phone. And I know this is, like, the weirdest way that people have ever started comedy, but I was, like, very socially awkward growing up, and I've kind of grown up a little bit out of that, but something about being around people all day long, and it was the same people coming in, because this restaurant's pretty popular, and it's all, like, I would say he has, like, a pretty rabid fan base, and I would start just telling jokes to the regulars when I was, like, 16, 17 years old, and I don't know, something about that was in my brain, and then my next job after that, I was a grocery store manager. I went from grocery store clerk all the way up to manager.
Nice.
And yeah, and I would like to do bits around the store, and, like, one of my favorite bits to do, it's really dumb, but I would go on the intercom for the whole store and pretend to be an old woman who fell in a well, and I was like, hello, I'm an old lady trapped at the bottom of a well.
I'm just picturing being in the store and hearing that over the intercom.
Yeah, everyone's probably like, what the heck is going on? And I'm just like, this is funny. And, like, at that same job, I would prank call the butcher shop every day and be like, hello, do you have chicken feet? And the butcher would be like, yeah, we do. And I'd be like, must be hard to find shoes then.
Did they get sick of that pretty quick?
Yeah, they got sick of it, and then they caught on. They knew it was me. And then one time I got the florist person to call, and I was like, hey, call. I'm going to tell you what to say. Just do this. And then the butcher answers, got a little annoyed. He thought it was me at first, and then he realized that it wasn't me. So he answers her questions. And then she said, must be hard to find shoes then, and then hung up, and he got infuriated. And I was like, this is comedy. This is what I want to be doing for the rest of my life.
I like it. And, I like that.
Yeah. So doing that for a little while, and then I was just like, you know what? Let's move to New York and figure it out. And then I just started doing improv. And I don't know why I started doing improv, because I never liked performing improv, and I never liked watching improv, but I was pretty decent at it. So I was like, let's just do this.
It's so funny. I hear that from a lot of people. At least one or two other people who've been on the show are like, I do improv, but I don't really like improv.
Yeah, I don't.
Why?
Like,
why is
that?
Saying, what is that about? Like, why is it? I mean, it's clearly a thing to do. Like, it's obviously very popular. Lots of people doing it. Lots of teams. All of that stuff. But you know, what is it? What is it about it that we don't like?
Well, to tie into what you were saying is that you said you liked doing improv because it was different than the way people normally do it, right? And I think that the improv that is being presented in the big cities these days, New York, Chicago, L.A., probably other cities too, is long-form improv. And I feel like it's very masturbatory. I hate using that phrase, but it's just like, hey, we're doing this thing for ourselves. Whereas, like, whose line is it anyway? Like, short-form improv, you're doing it for the audience.
Right.
And there's that connection with the audience because you're constantly asking for a suggestion. You're constantly checking in for audience reaction, whereas long form improv is much more theatrical. You don't care about you're like told to like, yeah, don't even pretend the audience doesn't exist. And I was like, no, I got into this to like have the social aspect of it. And I like my like favorite stand up bits that I do are more crowd participatory than they are just me telling a joke and waiting for a reaction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so I think the reason I don't like long-form improv, and there's, like, too many rules for it. Like, there's, like, yeah, this thing has no rules. Do what you want. And then as soon as you start doing it, your coach or director is like, here are all the rules you broke during that show.
I didn't realize that because I haven't stepped into that scene. Now I'm both curious and maybe repulsed a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, one of the fun things about it, I mean, first of all, it should always be about the audience, not in the sense that you can't do your work, but in the sense that you are there to, you're soliciting laughs. We're trying to get laughs.
Definitely.
Like the reason Whose Line Is It Anyway works so well. Now one reason is because they cut all the boring parts, and I'm sure there's some great stuff that hits on the cutting room floor. But as I understand it, they do the show, and you know they're only giving you the best bits, which is what they should do because it's a TV show.
Yeah.
But it's all designed to get a laugh. I mean, if it weren't designed to get a laugh, the show wouldn't be as wildly popular as it is.
Exactly. Well, I've been I hate saying the phrase Twitter famous, but I got a big Twitter following, and I've been trying to. I've never put the work into YouTube. I just started doing it a few weeks ago, and I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos of like, how do I get a bigger following? And one thing that one person said was, make the videos your audience wants and not the videos you want. So I was like, oh my God, he's right, because there's a bridge between the two, right? So my audience wants me to do funny stuff, but instead of doing like the videos that I want like directly, they're like, yeah, see what the audience wants you to do. So like, for instance, I polled my audience the other day and they're like, do a video where you do impressions. And I was like, that's not something I would have thought to do on my own, but maybe that'll be popular.
Okay. Now, do you do impressions?
Not good ones. I'm working on them. So for me, this is going to be an exercise in doing better impressions.
Well, it's not a bad thing. I mean, you get a little nudge to do work on a new skill, right?
Yeah, exactly. I could do Lorne Michaels pretty decently, if that counts for anything.
Well, let me hear your Lorne Michaels.
Well, he's based on Dr. Evil is based on him. So to get into it, I have to say.
Oh, Dr. Evil is based on Lorne?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so to get into him, I got to be like, $1 million. Well, hello, welcome to Saturday Night Live. I'm Lorne Michaels.
Now I hear it.
I think that's decent, right?
That's not bad. I got it.
There's some fun YouTube videos of, like, Bill Hader doing his Lorne Michaels as a serial killer. It's very funny.
I imagine a lot of people will wind up doing a Lorne Michaels impression because they spent so much time with the guy.
Yeah, I've spent little time with him. I used to work at the Pit, the People's Improv Theater, and he would come a couple of times to, like, watch auditions, so we'd have to, like, sneak him in the back row, and I don't think I've ever said more than, like, hey, how are you to him, but even in those moments, I was like, oh, I got to watch what I say.
Oh, that's interesting. So he came to watch auditions. What auditions?
Well, they used to have, I don't know if they still do this, but they had live auditions at the different theaters, so like Pitt, UCB, and it was to see how people would react in front of a live audience. So they're like SNL auditions at the Pitt.
Oh, okay. So it's not like something, it's not like he's checking out something else. Like it's an actual Saturday Night Live audition.
Yeah, they were like proper SNL auditions. Yeah, I don't think he came to like random stuff. I don't remember seeing him outside of those couple of times.
That's interesting. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Not bad. He's had some success in this business. He, you know, he's doing all right.
He's done okay. He's kind of shaped
okay
the last 40 years of comedy.
Norm MacDonald said, he said to Lorne, you know, how come you never have me over to your house? And Lorne said, because it would make you very angry to see how I live. And I just thought that was great. Like,
yeah,
that's brilliant. Because he's got
one.
A stupid amount of money. Like, I mean, you know, it's Broadway Video, like, produced everything. So he owns all this stuff outright. So he's making it coming and going. And, I mean, you know, he'd probably be fine just based on, whatever he gets just to produce the show. But, you know, just to actually own it and to get all the ancillary income and, you know, all the YouTube revenue and, you know, everything else. I mean, I can't even imagine how much money that is.
Well, I've been watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, and they say that Larry David is worth about $400 to $450 million between all my research. Yeah, and I was like, okay, Larry has had a lot of success, but I think that what Lorne has is even more, right? Because it's longer, and I don't know. I don't know how money works. So.
That's tricky. I don't either, but Seinfeld is in syndication at a level that very few shows get to. You know,
yeah, that's
so
true.
I mean that like if I recall correctly, Jerry gets $50 million a year from Seinfeld.
Ugh.
So you figure Larry's probably getting about that. What did you say?
I said if I had 1 year like that, I'd be
I'd be happy with 1/50th of what 1 year. I'd love to have $1 million. You know,
oh, man.
I mean, my God, I mean, $50 million a year. I mean, that's just that's just astonishing. I mean, I hope he's charitable because wow, is that a crap ton of money? It's crazy.
Well, from doing virtual comedy shows, I've made more money than I have doing real comedy shows. And
oh, is that right?
$50 last week, yeah.
Nice with you looking through with the $50. What do? You ask for donations?
Yeah, so those shows that I got was people putting, like, your Venmo. Yeah, I started putting Venmo handles on screen, so they're free shows, so if anyone can watch them, they don't have to, like, it's not behind a paywall or anything. But if they're like, oh, here's $4, here's $3, and that all adds up nice.
Yeah, I got to make a title card. I did my show. I've been doing the last couple of weeks. I did a show that I hosted and produced, and it's a little tricky. I will say it is definitely a little more involved. I'm very impressed with all that you're doing because I know it's not easy.
Yeah, well, it's giving me something to do. Like I generally wake up, get out of bed, and then like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, I start. Like make it like a quick graphic card that takes me like 30, 40 minutes and then research some news. So it gives me like 3 hours in the morning of something to just like keep my head focused on.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like everyone's so many people I know are sitting around watching Netflix and, you know, like I do another podcast with Ruben Wolf about mafia movies and we have to find time to watch the movie every week, and I really have trouble finding that time. Like, it's not impossible. Like, I haven't missed one yet. Well, actually, that's not true. I did miss one. But, you know, it's just –
Which one did you miss?
I don't even remember. It was a movie I didn't really care about, so maybe that was part of it. But I just – maybe it was even something I'd seen. I just didn't have time that week. I just said, I'm really sorry, man. I just can't do it this week. Because you know, just with I do a lot of open mics, which I find very gratifying. It's just a way to get the material out you know, just sort of get it out of my head and, you know, into the world in some way. And I'm going to start recording more bits, and, you know, just to, because a lot of this stuff is just very time limited. Like, it just doesn't last. I did a thing on the Global Citizen broadcast, and, you know, that's dead. I mean, even though it was, I liked it and it was a funny bit, but that was 3 weeks ago already. Like, nobody cares.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd like to be able to just get that stuff out as quickly as possible and just, you know, stick it up on Instagram or something. Even if it's not perfect, just whatever. Let's just get it out there. I feel like the rules have changed a bit. You know, like, it used to be you want to be very careful about what you post, and now it's more like, meh, you know, let's just get it out there. Who, you know, it doesn't matter.
Let's get it out there. Let's entertain the masses as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Now, you said you have a big Twitter following. How did you amass that?
So, do you remember the TV show At Midnight on Comedy Central?
I do.
So, for those listening who don't know, At Midnight was a game show hosted by Chris Hardwick. And he would get three contestants on every week, and he would ask them, like, they'd go on Reddit ahead of time and be like, this crazy thing happened in the world today, write a joke about it. And then there was a hashtag game involved in the show. And I was obsessive about the hashtag game, so much so that I would tweet out and then get, like, 500-700 likes a night on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And then... yeah, I was doing pretty well with that show, and then they were retweeting me a whole lot, so their retweets would either go into their blog or on TV. So a lot of my tweets were featured in the At Midnight Comedy Central blog, which sounds really lame, but it, like, definitely, like, boosted my following a lot.
Doesn't sound lame to me. That sounds terrific.
Yeah, and then once they used one of my jokes on air and credited me, so there's just a guy on Comedy Central going, "Tweet of the Day by Ronnie Pascal," and then read the tweet.
Nice.
And I was like, that's amazing. Yeah, so, like, stuff like that built my following. And then through that, these aren't as popular, but they still exist, where news companies who are too lazy to write articles will find a trending hashtag and just kind of aggregate them into a list and be like, oh, today, like, I don't know, the royal family did this thing. Here are tweets to, like, here are comedians making fun of it, and then they'll just list, like, oh, yeah, today Prince Harry did this thing or whatever. Does that make sense?
Forget about, you know, you say places that are too lazy. I mean, that's, like, everybody does that now. I mean, even the New York Times has a roundup of late night jokes. I mean, that's become journalism. I mean, it's weird to me, and I'm glad that you mentioned it, that it's also weird to you. But that's a very common thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So those news sources would just quote my tweets all the time, and so I get Twitter followers from, like, so I made a Brexit joke the day Brexit happened, not really understanding that it was much more than it was, and I was starting to get, like, I tweeted something, it didn't get a lot of traction, and then, like, a day later, I was getting all these angry Brits yelling at me, and I didn't know why, and I found out that one of my tweets was, like, broadcast on the BBC.
Oh, wow.
Calling me, like, a dumb American. Yeah, the joke was, like, pretty innocent, and it was, Brexit is the best diet because you lose all your pounds overnight.
That's a good joke. I like that joke.
Yeah, and I didn't understand, like, the whole, like, racial divide and all that stuff behind Brexit at the time. So I was like, oh, this is funny because they, like,
that's
literally
just a silly
lost...
joke. Please, they got to get over themselves. It's like, because it's all your fault, right? Like, the reason it got so ugly is because of Ronnie Pascal. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, but, like, yeah. So I got a following through, like, between At Midnight, and they would put all my jokes on listicles all over the world, and then, yeah, that is how I got my following.
Nice. That's a good way to get it. I like that.
I like it. It's good. And, like, also, I'm not famous where I could, like, walk into somewhere and people are like, oh, look, it's Ronnie Pascal. No one has ever walked down the street and recognized me, and I still have fans.
Right, yes, that's true. So you get all the benefits, none of the downside. That's a good.
Exactly.
That's a good way to look at it. I like that. How many Twitter followers do you have?
I just hit 41,000, I think.
Oh, wow.
Like, a modest amount. Like, not famous, famous, but enough.
Do you have a blue check mark?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Look at you with the blue check mark.
And I'm like, what's the blue check mark really mean? But I've gotten, like, job offers because of it. I've gotten TV roles because of it. So it's got to mean something.
What do you mean? What TV roles? What do you mean?
That's a small one. I did a TV show. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called Sound Scary. And my friend found me because I'm pretty sure he found me because I have the blue check mark. And it's what is it? How do I word this? It's a talk show for horror movies. Like, we go to, like, locations in Los Angeles and, like, where a horror movie was filmed and talk about the horror movie.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, so for this episode, he took me to a haunted museum in Burbank, and we talked about just, like, soundtracks to horror movies. So,
are you a horror movie guy?
Yes and no. I love horror movies, but I generally only watch them for like 1 or 2 months a year.
Now, is that Halloween or
like,
what?
Yeah, like September and October. Like September, it starts like setting in. I feel like whatever. So like when a woman gets baby crazy, whatever that is, I have like the man version of it for horror movies around September.
My
biological clock is like, it's time to start watching people get murdered again.
That's funny.
And like November 1st, it goes away.
Okay. Well, that's not a bad time to get it. That's I don't know if I go quite to the baby crazy level, but you know, they're around that time of year I tend to like some horror movies. I grew up not liking them at all. Like I really was not into them. I didn't want to be scared. And then, as I've gotten older, like my son got into it, so we watch them together, and it's, you know, they're fun. They've definitely got their place.
Yeah. Like, Midsommar, did you see Midsommar by any chance?
No.
So Midsommar is, like, it came out about a year ago. It was, like, considered the most gruesome movie ever, and I went to go see it and with two friends, and I didn't know what the movie was about. I didn't even know it was a horror movie. I just knew everyone was talking about it. I should go see it because I had free time. And I brought two friends. One was repulsed by the entire thing, and the other one was very similar to me in that we both didn't look at it as a horror movie. We, like, looked at it as a comedy that was just really dark, and we're sitting there laughing the whole movie. And so, like, I like to find, like, humor in horror movies, but I also don't like comedic horror movies, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I do like some of them, but usually I don't.
So something like Scream, was that not, that you don't like that?
I like Scream because Scream still treated itself like a horror movie.
Right.
And, like, there are movies that do well of, like, treating, like, there's a movie called Dale and Tucker vs. Evil. Have you seen that one?
No, I've heard of it, though.
Yeah, Dale and Tucker vs. Evil is great because it's both on its own a really good horror movie and a really good slasher movie. Or, excuse me, slasher and comedy is what I meant to say.
Right.
And then, like, something like Shaun of the Dead is, like, a good balance of the two.
Yeah, that I really need to see because those are some of my guys. Some of my favorites are in that. I just haven't gotten to it.
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
Yeah. They're great.
Yeah, they're great.
Just, Simon Pegg is the best. He's just amazing.
I don't think he's ever made anything bad.
Yeah, he's kind of got a charmed career. I mean, he really, you know, like, because you figure at some point a guy would make a stupid choice, but no, doesn't seem to. He's done quite well for himself.
Yeah.
You know, and he hasn't done like a giant. I mean, he did the Star Trek movies, but where he was terrific, but you know, like in terms of going like big Hollywood and you know doing some garbagey comedy or whatever, like to the best of my knowledge, he's never done that, which I think is smart. I think you're better off not doing it.
Yeah, definitely. Or pull like a Daniel Day-Lewis where you do one brilliant movie every like what 5 years.
Right. Yes. Exactly. And then retire while you're still in your prime. I mean, you know, he doesn't need to keep. He doesn't need to keep going, but he also doesn't need to retire.
No, I aim to be the Daniel Day-Lewis of stand-up.
No, right? Really? You want to only perform every 5 years?
Once every 5 years, be like really get into the role, and then drop out for 5 years.
Nice, that could work. I think I'd miss it. I got to be honest. I kind of like I go through every now and then. I get lucky and I go through a period where I'm booked every night, and I kind of like it. I really do.
Yeah. I went through a period for 2 or 3 years where I didn't perform at all, and it was really a bummer.
Well, are you this busy in when we're in, you know, the real world? Like, do you have this many shows going?
So my day job during the regular world is I am a theater lighting technician. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, so I mostly do like stand up, sketch, and improv shows. And so I tried to balance it where, like, because those nights I could do like 2 or 3 shows at a time, like in terms of lighting, and I would try to like squeeze one stand up show in every night. So, yeah, I'm pretty busy. Like, and I also was trying to produce one show a week. So, like, for instance, my last show that I put up was like the week before, and I got 7 other people plus myself, and we all did 5 minutes of stand up as Adam Driver. So it was 8 Adam Driver impersonators.
That's fun. That's really fun.
I actually think that show might translate to the internet, so maybe I could like get a reunion show.
Why not? Sure. I mean, if people like impressions, I mean, I think that's true. I've heard that people on Instagram and YouTube, they like impressions.
Yeah. Yeah, so I try to like stay busy. And I only like kind of recently started doing stand up, so I'm like 6 months into like just like really focusing at it, cuz I used to do it like once a year. To like focus on doing improv and sketch and all that other stuff.
Huh. Okay. So you were more into improv and sketch, and then only recently started stand up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started doing stand up because I was like, oh, it's a way I can get my jokes out quicker.
Oh yeah. Listen, the great thing, you know, if you've got an outlet every day, you can react to something that just happened. I mean, it's amazing. It's just the best. It's like you could react to something that happened 20 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago. Like just bam, jump it in, and people love it. Everybody loves a topical joke. You know, it's a great feeling to have something, then just go boom and just, you know, drop it right in there.
Yesterday I was recording my Zoom show, my YouTube show at 9 o'clock, and then I was doing a stand-up show at 11 o'clock. While recording my Zoom show, Zoom said, your internet connection is unstable, and I immediately wrote a joke about that and performed it. And as Zoom said, my internet is unstable, and I immediately wanted to date it.
There you go. That is among the better my internet connection is unstable jokes that I've heard. That's a good one. I like that.
Thank you. And I was like, oh yeah, I'd have to like sit on that all day. Hopefully it organically came up. I can't shoehorn the joke in. Can I ever use this joke for real? And so I was like, you know, I can just literally say it when I want to say it.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's obviously really, really nice. And, you know, it's not just the news, like you say. I mean, you did the joke about the Zoom internet connection. And it can really be anything. It can be something that happened in the room. You know, people love that when you do that, and it's a callback to something else that happened. Everybody loves a callback.
Oh, yeah. I've learned that.
So do you primarily work at the Pit?
For lighting, yeah, I work at the Pit. I was the Pit artistic director from 2015 through 2017. And then mid-2017 to 2019, I just, like, that was the phase that I was talking about where I didn't perform at all. And I just kind of gave up on everything. And I was like, I don't want to be a performer anymore. Don't want to ever this again. Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but and then I came back and I was like, that was stupid. Let's figure this out. And so when I came back, I just came back as a lighting guy, and I've been doing it at the Pit, Brooklyn Comedy Collective, and then like the Magnet a little bit too. So
okay, that's good.
Spread it out a little bit and like try to like enjoy the communities for like the fun that they have instead of like. Because my issue with the Pit was, I love the Pit, but I got too deep into it. So I started understanding everyone's gossip and politics. And I was like, I'm not here for the gossip or the politics.
It must be impossible to stay out of that when you're the artistic director, right? I mean, you got to be super involved in all of that.
Yeah, I knew everyone. Like, I was going through an old notebook a few days ago, and I was like, it said two people's names, and then it said hates each other. And then I was like, why would I write that? And then I was like, oh, it's because they were on an improv team together, and they didn't want to perform together anymore. So I had to, like, keep a note of who hated each other, who liked performing together, who did what to who. And I was like, I don't care about this stuff.
Wow, that is so uninteresting to me. I mean, something that I have been very drama resistant for my entire, you know, time. I used to do theater in college and also out of college. And I always was very just I couldn't deal with the drama, the offstage drama, and that it holds you back a little bit. Like if you don't want to, because everybody else loves it, they all like eat it up. And if I just found that if I stayed out of it, there were things I was missing out on. Now I was okay with that because I really didn't want to deal with it. But I do find that you just people love they love the talking.
Yeah, I don't like the talking. I just like. Really want to avoid it as best I can. And I think that's what ruined it for me. And now that I'm like back in a lesser role, I was like, oh yeah, this is so much more enjoyable. I don't got to deal with that anymore. I don't care who's dating who and who's hooking up with who and what's happening.
Was that a big part of being artistic director?
Yeah, I like had to know all of it. And then kind of like balancing that and like also like just like stoking everyone's egos. Not a fan. Like someone be like, my show should be on Friday night, but you booked me on Thursday night. Why? And I was just like, oh man, these aren't the arguments I want to be having.
Yes, I totally understand that. That sounds like it would be very unpleasant, particularly since there was probably a very good reason, you know, for somebody's show to not be on Friday night.
Yeah, it was always that. Also like a mix of like, I don't know, maybe I booked the Friday show first and like your show maybe deserved it and you just, the timing wasn't right and like stuff like that. Or maybe like your show needs work and we got to like establish it first or something like that.
Well, everyone takes stuff very personally. I have found that. I find that to be true with booking stand-up shows and, you know, everybody takes it very personally. And it's not. It's really not. I'm very upfront and I'm very direct and I'm very like, you know, like it is what it is. You know, this is what I got. You want to do a show? Great. Let's do a show.
Yeah. No one's been in a jerk to me doing my show right now, but like the thing that I'm always afraid of is like someone saying like, why am I opening? Why am I headlining? Why am I this? And I'm always ready to be like, hey, my lineups now are literally just in the order that I booked you all, and I'm not putting any thought into it anymore.
We're right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I feel exactly the same way. Like, let's just, you know what? It's whatever order. If rolling a die would be too much work. Like, I'm just going to book you. I'm just putting it in here, and then we're going to do the show, and it's going to be great. Everybody has a good time, and then we're going to leave, and then we're going to do it again. How about that? Does that sound good to everybody? Because that's what sounds good to me.
That sounds great to me.
Right? Man. Well, Ronnie, this has been great. I don't want to stop. Like, I want to keep going, but we can't because the thing will cut me off. So, I know. It's a bummer. It's really a bummer. I want a three-hour show every day. But then I never
Let's
get anything
do a
done. Let's do a three-hour show. Three-hour show. Three-hour show. Tell everyone where they can find you on the various social medias.
I am across the board on all social medias at Ronnie Pascal. Except on YouTube, they made me put an NYC at the end of it. So it's Ronnie Pascal NYC on YouTube.
Does that mean there's another Ronnie Pascal?
When I tried to register just Ronnie Pascal, it said, you have a very common name. You have to, like, differentiate yourself. And the only two Ronnie Pascals I've ever found are my grandfather that I'm named after and a professional soccer player. So not a very common name, but they say it's common, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't seem very common to me at all.
And also the
all right, well, Ronnie Pascal with the uncommon name, you have been an uncommonly good guest.
Good, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on. This has been really fun. We'll be back tomorrow here on Brett from the Bunker. It'll be at 11 a.m., as it always is, and we will have another guest, and we will have fun. So everyone, please, 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 stay safe.
Thanks, Brett. See you later.